It's Tuesday, April 5th, 2022, and I call the meeting of the House Higher Education Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Albright, present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzeman.
Present.
Heintzeman, present. Representative Howard.
Howard, present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Crenshaw.
Present.
Crenshaw, present. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Present.
Meckland, present. Representative Knorr.
Knorr, present.
Knorr, present. Representative Sandell.
Sandell, present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Thompson. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Next, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 30th, 2022?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Knorr moves approval of the minutes for March 30th, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 30th, 2022 are approved. Today we will be walking through the provisions of the DE amendment to House File 3872. Nonpartisan staff will take the lead and walk us through the bill. And afterwards, we will hear public testimony. Tomorrow we will begin to take official action on the bill. Finally, we have set aside on Thursday, if necessary, a finished markup and passage of the bill if we don't complete within our two regularly scheduled hearings. Members, I just want to take a moment to thank everyone for their contribution to this equity and student-centered bill. Every Minnesotan deserves the opportunity to succeed and thrive, and the provisions we're going through today will increase that access and opportunity. I want to just highlight some of the lenses that we really use to put together this bill, and that is through an equity lens. And you'll see that a number of provisions in our bill helping aspiring teachers of color and scholarships, our tribal colleges, also our Native American Indian grants, inclusive higher education, and how we structure our Board of Regents as well. We also have a number of environmental provisions, and just to name a few, it's the University of Minnesota come up with a 50-year plan for Minnesota's clean water plan. We have sustainability measures in here for the University of Minnesota, including solar electrification, as well as developing a sustainability framework and plan, and then also green training, and in the Natural Resource Research Institute with funding for them to be able to go forward with building their facility and doing the amazing research they do. We also have a number of provisions in here for the well-being and safety of students, Hunger-Free Campus Act expansion, mental health service, funding for Minnesota State, more funding for our students for their meeting their basic needs. We also have legislation for University of Minnesota for safety, as well as affirmative consent language for our colleges and universities to be sure that students are learning about that. And then and training on that. Then we also, affordability is key and center to our bill. And we have provision here to lower the assigned student responsibility for their education through the state grant program. And we have free two-year college for Minnesota students who come from low-income and middle-income families. So every child who is born in Minnesota will know that they have the opportunity in their families as they grow up to be able to continue their education and earn the credentials to help them be successful in life and their families. And so I want to thank all the members for their work on this bill and for all our committee staff, for partisan and nonpartisan staff. None of this could be done without you. And to all of our testifiers this year, from our students to our faculty to our private colleges and all the different people that come together to help provide input to create a bill that helps Minnesota students thrive and helps Minnesota thrive. And we will be going through the walkthrough today. And we have our wonderful fiscal staff, Ken Stavery, along with Nathan Hopkins from House Research, and they will walk us through the bill. So Mr. Stavery, please present the bill to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, Ken Stavery, House Fiscal Staff. I'm going to share my screen with the spreadsheet to the DE that was posted on the committee website and distributed by Mr. Herring. So I'm going to do that real fast. So Madam Chair, just a couple housekeeping items before I kind of dive into the spreadsheet. Today we'll be speaking mostly about columns E and column F. Columns E of the spreadsheet as well as columns F of the spreadsheet represent the changes within the DE. The other columns in the spreadsheet are columns C and D, which represent the governor's supplemental budget, which the committee heard earlier this session. I'll just start with the top line totals for the agencies within the committee's jurisdiction. Line 6 is the Office of Higher Education. That can be found on the DE on line 1.20. That's $57,469,000 increase in FY23. And then in column F, the tails, $117,212,000 for FY24 and 25. Line 7 is the top line total for Minnesota State, which can be found on line 6.23 in the DE. That's a $10 million increase in the FY22-23 biennium, and then $18 million in the FY24-25 biennium. Line 8 is the total for the University of Minnesota. That can be found on line 8.22 in the DE, and that's $32,531,000 in FY22-23. And then $14,788,000 in the tails. The DE on a line 11 is the general fund appropriation. So the total for the DE is $100 million in FY22-23, and then $150 million in FY24-25. We'll skip down and discuss the individual provisions. I'll point out the lines within the DE as appropriate. So starting on line 18 with the Office of Higher Education, line 19 is the student parent center grant. So the governor's change item can be found on line 1.24 in the DE, and that's $6,925,000 in FY22-23, and then $12,380,000 in FY24-25 in the tails. Skipping down to line 20 are operating expenses for tribal colleges found on line 2.9 in the DE. So $3 million in FY23, and then $6 million in FY24-25. Skipping down several lines is the next change item. That's modifications to the state grant on line 23 and found on line 2.18 in the DE. That's $493,000 in FY22-23, and then $18,590,000 in the tails. Line 24 is the underrepresented student teacher grant item, found on line 2.23 in the DE. That's $1.5 million in FY22-23, and $3 million in FY24-25. Skipping down further on the spreadsheet, the next item is on line 26, which is the teacher shortage loan repayment expansion increase. That's $700,000 increase found on line 2.32 in the DE in the FY22-23 biennium, and then $1.4 million in FY24-25. The next is on line 27, which is a change to the emergency assistance for post-secondary students. That can be found on line 3.6 of the DE, and there's $731,000 increase in FY22-23 and $1,462,000 in FY24-25. Skipping down further on line 31 is the next item, which is the hunger-free campus expansion found on line 3.13 of the DE. That's $200,000 in FY23 and then $400,000 increase in FY24-25. On line 32 are the American Indian scholarships found on line 3.20 of the bill. That's an increase of $3,240,000 in FY23 and then an increase of $6,480,000 in FY24-25. Line 33 is the inclusive higher education grants to be found on line 3.26 of the bill. That's $750,000 in FY23 and then $750,000 in each fiscal year for a total of $1.5 million in FY24-25. Line 34 is the tuition-free college grants. That's found on line 4.3 of the bill. And that's $29,730,000 in FY23. And then continuing to the tail, $64 million in FY24-25. Line 35 is the Minnesota Reconnect Program, found on line 4.25 of the DE amendment. And that's $1 million in FY23, and then $2 million in FY24-25 in the tails. Moving down, there's several one-time items in the bill for operation for the Office of Higher Ed. That starts on line 37, and that is the Addiction Medicine Fellowship, found on line 4.30, and is $1.2 million in FY23 only. And then on line 38 is the Teacher of Color Scholarships Program, which is found on line 5.30, and is $3 million in FY23 only. And then moving down on line 39 is the Social Worker Scholarships, which is found on 6.12 of the DE. And that's $5 million, a one-time appropriation in FY23. That wraps up the Office of Higher Education items. I'll flip over to the next part of the spreadsheet and just move our screen down a bit to cover Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota. The change items for Minnesota State begin on line 44, and that's for campus responsiveness and stabilization. The DE appropriates an additional $6 million in FY23, and then $12 million into the tails of FY24-25. That appropriation can be found on line 6.31 of the DE amendment. Moving down to line 46 are the Mental Health Awareness Program appropriations. That is line 7.3 of the DE amendment, and is $2 million in FY23, and then $4 million in the tails for FY24 and FY25. Moving down further on the spreadsheet is line 47, which is supporting students' basic needs. That is on line 7.13 of the DE amendment, and is $1 million in FY23, and then $2 million in the tails FY24 and FY25. Line 48 is the CTE pilot expansion. That can be found on line 7.29 of the DE amendment and is $1 million one-time appropriation in FY23. And that concludes the items from Minnesota State. We'll further go down the spreadsheet. On line 52 starts the University of Minnesota changes to appropriations. The first one being on line 54, which is the reduced cost of attendance burden. That can be found on line 8.28 of the DE and is $6 million in FY23 and then $12 million in FY24 and 25. Moving down further on line 55 is the University of Minnesota Safety and Security Appropriation. That can be found on line 9.3 and is $10 million in FY23, a one-time appropriation. Line 56 is an appropriation from the University of Minnesota for NRRI. That can be found on line 9.26 of the DE amendment and is $6,881,000 in FY23 and is a one-time appropriation. Line 57 are sustainability improvements at the University of Minnesota. That can be found on line 10.1 and is $7,500,000 in FY23, a one-time appropriation. Then on line 58 is the 50-year clean water plan, found on line 10.15 of the bill, and that is $650,000, a one-time appropriation, FY23. Then on line 59 is the green training program account transfer. That's can be found on 11.6 of the bill, and then is $1.5 million in FY23, and then is $2,788,000 in FY24-25. That concludes the University of Minnesota portion. I'll just point out on line 66 are the various transfers out and in. Members may recognize them from the larger spreadsheet that tracks transfers between the general fund and special revenue funds for directions of the bill. And this is just tracks the transfer of the green training account program that I just discussed from the general fund going to be deposited into the special revenue fund. And Madam Chair, that concludes the spreadsheet. I would turn it over to Mr. Hopkins to discuss the policy portions of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Sedgwick. We will now turn it over to our research chair, our research from the House, which is Nathan Hopkins. Please begin.
Madam Chair and committee members, this is Nathan Hopkins from House Research. I'm going to discuss Articles 2 and 3 of the DE, which contain policy items. Article 2 starts on page 11 of the DE. I'll run through section by section. Section 1 on page 11, this deals with the Hunger Free Campus grants. It was House File 3933. It adds private nonprofit institutions to the list of institutions that can receive those grants. On pages 12 and 13 of the DE, this is from House File 3892. It deals with required sexual harassment and violence policies. Section 2 on page 12 requires an affirmative consent standard within post-secondary institutions policies. This language has changed somewhat since the committee last heard this bill. Members might want to look at page 12, lines 27 through 29, which says that the affirmative consent standard required under this section has to incorporate all the elements of consent that's defined in section 609.341, which is a criminal statute. And section 3, also on the sexual harassment and violence policy topic. This is the training portion. This has also been changed slightly. The previous version of the bill that the committee heard deleted a required training on consent as defined by that criminal statute. That's no longer deleted, so the school will be training on both consent as defined by the criminal statute as well as the affirmative consent standard added under section 2. Section 4 of Article 2 begins on page 14 of the DE. This is the Inclusive Higher Education Technical Assistance Center. It establishes the center within the Office of Higher Education, and the center's primary mission is to increase access to higher education for students with intellectual disabilities. The second part, which is from that same bill, House File 4210, Section 5 is on page 17 of the DE. And this is the Inclusive Higher Education Grant Program. It creates a grant program to assist higher education institutions with creating or expanding post-secondary programs for students with intellectual disabilities. Section 6 begins on page 20 of the DE. This is from House File 4449. It's the Free College Grant Program. This creates a new grant program for students enrolled at state colleges, so two-year institutions, in-state two-year institutions, and it would cover any remaining cost of tuition and fees subject to a sliding scale based on the recipient's reported family income. There's been a little bit of a change since the committee last heard the underlying bill language here. You can see that change on page 21. The change is how the sliding scale of family adjusted gross income works. The tranches used to be much larger. Now they proceed in 5% increments. So the award gets smaller as a person's, as a student's reported family adjusted gross income grows. Section 7 is on page 22 of the DE. This is the state grant program. It's decreasing the assigned student responsibility from 50% to 48% of the institution's cost of attendance. Section 8 is also on page 22. This is one of the governor's proposals. It creates a new grant program to assist students who are parents or expectant parents. Section 9 begins on page 23 of the DE amendment. Sections 9 and 10 are both affecting the American Indian scholarships. Section 9 removes a requirement that undergraduate students have to be Pell eligible in order to receive an Indian scholarship. And section 10, which is on page 24 of the DE, increases maximum award amounts for undergraduate students from 4,000 to 8,000 per academic year, and maximum grants for graduate students from 6,000 to 8,000 per academic year. On page 25, section 11, this is also from the governor's bill. It affects the teacher shortage loan repayment program. It increases the maximum amount of loan repayment from $1,000 to $2,000 per year. Section 12 and section 13 both address MnState's request. On section 12, beginning there on page 25, this requires the board to pursue additional centralized mental health resources to benefit students. And section 13, which is on page 27, at the very top of page 27, this requires centralized basic needs resources to students. Beginning on page 27, these are a number of changes that were in House File 2578, which Representative Schultz carried. There was a large DE amendment that this committee heard and voted on. These changes are what were contained in that DE amendment to House File 2578. So they affect the way that the legislature goes about electing regents and the composition of the Board of Regents. Beginning on page 27, section 14, this provides that the legislature should elect a tenured faculty member and a representative of a university labor organization to two of the board's three unassigned at-large seats. It also provides that one member shall be a member of a recognized Indian tribe in Minnesota. Section 15 begins on page at the bottom of page 27. This amends existing law to address how redistricting or the gain or loss of a congressional district in Minnesota will affect the requirement that at least one member of the Board of Regents be a resident of each congressional district. Section 16 imposes a two-term limit on regents that's on page 28 of the DE. Also on page 28, these changes affect the composition of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council, which recruits and screens candidate applicants to be university regents. It changes the current composition and requires that the RCAC consist of 25 members, 5 appointed by the House, 5 by the Senate, 5 current faculty members appointed by the faculty senates, five student body presidents from each campus, and 5 designees from the listed councils. Beginning on page 29, this affects the RCAC's duties. It eliminates a provision that indirectly prohibits RCAC from imposing any kind of term limits, because section 16 of the DE does impose 2-term limits on regents. Section 19 begins on page 30 of the DE. This affects regent nomination and election. It requires the Joint Legislative Committee for regent nomination to nominate 2 rather than 1 candidates for each vacancy on the board, and at the joint convention to elect regent, it prohibits floor nominations. On page 31 of the DE. Section 20 of Article 2 is the Green Training Program for training employees of the University of Minnesota. On page 33 of the DE, this is also addressing hunger-free campus grants. This amends the last year's budget act to clarify that nonprofit private post-secondary institutions can receive those hunger-free campus grants. At the very top of page 34, this is a very short section addressing the Aspiring Teachers of Color pilot program, because this bill, the DE, adds some additional funding to that program, and that funding remains available until June 30th, 2027. This sets an expiration for that pilot program at that same date, June 30th, 2027. Also on page 34, this is section 23 of Article 2. This is a social work scholarship program for students preparing to become licensed social workers in Minnesota. This was in Representative Winkler's House File 3581. And on page 36, section 24, this is also from Representative Schultz, DE, to House File 2578. This requests the Board of Regents to amend their policies so that a compensated university employee can serve as a regent, since this suite of changes also includes a requirement that a sitting university faculty member be a regent. Article 3 of the bill, this is the Office of Higher Education's agency bill, which this committee has previously heard. It was introduced as House File 3672, and it contains various administrative changes, technical changes to the Office of Higher Education's programs and regulations. Madam Chair, if any of the committee members have any questions for me or Mr. Savory, please let us know. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. Members, do any of you have any clarifying questions from Mr. Hopkins or Mr. I don't see any, so we will move on to our testifiers. First testifying with us today is Chief Dan King, President of Red Lake Nation College. Welcome to the committee, Mr. King, and I'm looking forward to your testimony. We had technical difficulties the last time, so I'm glad that you're here.
Yeah, and I'm glad to be here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, great. I'll keep this real short. It's only about 2 minutes.
Okay? Okay, proceed.
Okay, I did send a PowerPoint to everyone just to let you know in greater detail, so I believe Sean Herring sent that out.
Okay, and Chief King, can you just please state your name for the record and your organization?
My name is Dan King, and I'm the president of the Red Lake Nation College and also the hereditary chief of the Red Lake Nation.
Okay, welcome.
Yep, thank you. The main reason that all Minnesota tribal colleges should get regular annual funding, just like all other public colleges in Minnesota, is to make sure that we're following all the Minnesota state laws, statutes, and policies. All of these protect natives from being treated differently. So according to Minnesota law, currently, Minnesota tribal colleges are being treated differently than all other public schools by not getting the same funding that everyone else gets. So we could fix that today. So in closing, I just wanted to state to everybody the obvious that all the land that we're standing on and sitting on today in Minnesota was once tribal lands. Almost two centuries of loss of land, language, and culture has resulted in historical and intergenerational trauma and poverty. This funding proposal that we have today for $1 million for each tribal college, only $3 million, this funding proposal could address those historical and educational traumas that have resulted in a lot of poverty and pain over the years. This funding proposal is the right thing to do, because without it, those educational gaps and the educational canyons we talked about in the past will continue and they will grow worse. So when you think about it, $3 million for three tribal colleges is really a pittance when compared to the annual budget of about $1.1 billion for the U of M and all the Minnesota State schools. So it's not even statistically significant, the $3 million for three tribal colleges when compared to the whole of the $57 billion Minnesota budget with the $9 billion surplus. So last, I wanted to just leave you with a thought on our ROI that we keep track of, and that's return on investment. What we do is we build people up, we build independent tax-paying citizens, we educate our members out of poverty, a self-help where people are helping themselves for a better life. And so we do that well at the tribal colleges. So when you really think about it, that $3 million for three tribal colleges will be the best investment in the Minnesota budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief King, for being here today. Next up, we have Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor of Finance and Facilities of Minnesota State. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Members of the committee, for the record, I am Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor of Finance and Facilities at Minnesota State. First, I would like to thank you, Chair Bernardi, for your partnership with Minnesota State, supporting our students, our faculty and staff, and the campuses and communities throughout the state of Minnesota. I would also like to thank the committee for consideration of our supplemental budget request and for your engagement with the colleges and universities in your communities. We also appreciate the great work of committee staff, whom we engage with throughout the year to respond to member questions and concerns. Madam Chair, my comments will be focused today on Minnesota State's supplemental budget request, but I'd also like to acknowledge the positive impact many of the provisions in the bill have on the students and the 47 communities Minnesota State serves across the state of Minnesota. In regards to the proposal that is in front of the committee, we appreciate the committee addressing student basic needs and mental health at the Minnesota State campuses in this bill. As part of our supplemental budget request, this funding would enable Minnesota State to sustain the exciting initiatives we have started into the future. As you know, Minnesota State requested $30 million for campus support to address the cost increases in the second year of the biennium, as we did not receive new funding last session over FY 2022 levels. We appreciate the $6 million included in the bill for campus support and look forward to continuing this discussion. The $30 million in the bill for two-year college tuition that will provide greater access to students is consistent with proposals that Minnesota State has brought forward in our last two biennial budget requests. We look forward to continuing this important work with the Office of Higher Education. As this program moves forward, we also would appreciate a conversation and consideration that also includes the first 2 years of free tuition at our seven state universities. That concludes my remarks, and I again thank you, Chair Bernardi, for your time and your commitment to higher education and the students across the state.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Mackey. With us now, we have J.D. Burton, the Chief Government Relations Officer from the University of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Burton, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is J.D. Burton. I'm the Chief Government Relations Officer here at the University of Minnesota. I'd like to express our appreciation to each of you for the time and attention that you gave to us, reviewing and discussing and considering our legislative request this session. This extends, of course, to your staff as well, who are fantastic partners, helpful and responsive to us all year. So thank you. Additionally, we want to please extend our gratitude and our appreciation, sincere appreciation for the funding that you have included in this bill for the University of Minnesota, including resources for all four components of the university's request this year, as well as to each of the members on this committee who helped carry this legislation moving forward. There's one item that I wanted to note, however, that we believe would have huge impact on students directly, and that's around our financial aid request. While we're grateful for the $6 million that you did provide, we were disappointed that this bill only provided about 9% of the overall request for those students who do have the greatest need or for those students who would be looking to attend one of our Greater Minnesota campuses. This proposal, as you know, would build on our existing financial aid framework by focusing on those undergraduate students that have the greatest need or those students who find themselves in a challenging position where they may not qualify for existing aid, but whose incomes are not high enough to cover the cost of college on their own. It would further expand existing eligibility aid for those students who would be interested in attending our Greater Minnesota campuses outside of the Twin Cities, which of course is a significant strategic plan for our enrollment management efforts. Under our proposal that we put forward, an eligible student who would be interested in attending a Greater Minnesota campus would have received an average yearly benefit of $3,529. Under the House proposal, however, that benefit shrinks to an average of about $353, so a difference of about $3,176 per year. And under our Promise Program expansion, the House proposal would then lower that amount from an average benefit that would have been $1,765 per year to $176 per year, which is a reduction of $1,589. This is not funding that would have gone to the administration. It was student-centered, focused on students at an institution that we believe is accountable to taxpayers and to the legislature. We encourage you, as this bill moves through the process, to consider increasing this funding, and we are hopeful that that is something that we can see moving forward. As we also noted last week, we do have concerns with the provision in this bill that would create a green training program at the U of M. We don't believe that advancing this effort through legislation is an appropriate way to achieve this and our shared sustainability goals. It would move these training decisions to a select and limited group of employees who are already part of a collective bargaining unit, thereby circumventing the bargaining process that we follow today. We would prefer to engage on this topic directly with our employees. To date, however, we are unaware of any efforts to bring this specific proposal directly to the university administration, and we are unaware of it until the bill was introduced, right before it's introduced. So we respectfully ask that you reconsider including this in your bill as it moves forward and allow us to engage in this process with our employees directly through our collective bargaining process. Madam Chair, we sincerely appreciate everything that you have done to support the University of Minnesota over many years. And like you, we believe that investing in our students is investing in the future of our state. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. We now have Paul Cerkvenik, President of Minnesota Private College Council. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Cerkvenik, President of the Minnesota Private College Council. I want to begin by thanking you, Madam Chair, and all of the committee members for the opportunities you've given our students to testify before you so that they could convey to you the deep gratitude they have for the financial aid they received through the Minnesota State Grant Program and convey the difference it makes in their lives. I also want to thank you for giving me and several of our college presidents the opportunity to testify and share with you the importance and the effectiveness of the State Grant Program in helping students with the greatest financial need succeed in college. We greatly appreciate that House File 3872 lowers the student share in the state grant program from 50% to 48%, and that this change is supported by increased base funding for the program in the next biennium. Thank you for taking this step that will significantly lower college costs for students facing the highest financial barriers to earning a degree. Lowering the student share 2 points is an important step in the right direction, and more than 66,000 students will benefit from this change. Because the need of lower income students is so significant, we requested a 4 percentage point reduction in the student share. And we look forward to working with all of you to make further progress on meeting the financial aid needs of students in this session and in future sessions. There are four other provisions of the bill that we strongly support, and I want to briefly mention. First, thank you for expanding funding for the Hunger Free Campus program and for making nonprofit institutions eligible to receive the matching grants provided by this program. This was a student-led initiative at our institutions and has the support of students at both public and nonprofit institutions. Second, I know our colleges will be glad to see that this bill is making additional investments in students pursuing teaching degrees that will help diversify our teaching workforce. This is a critically needed investment in the state's K-12 educational system. Third, we support and are grateful for the increased investment in OHE's program that provides emergency assistance to students. This program helps colleges keep students enrolled when emergencies threaten to cause an interruption in a student's educational journey. Finally, our colleges are strongly supportive of the expansion of the scholarship program for Minnesota's Native American students. Thank you for the opportunity to share our views with you on this bill. We look forward to continuing to work with you on these issues as the bill moves through the legislative process.
Thank you very much. Now we have Mark Grant, Government Relations from Minnesota State College faculty. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. For the record, my name is Mark Grant. Pardon me, I'm a communication studies instructor at Dakota County Technical College, and I currently help direct the governmental relations work on behalf of Minnesota State College faculty. We're the union that represents more than 4,000 college instructors, counselors, and librarians on 39 campuses across the state of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity today to speak very briefly on House File 3872. I'd like to begin by thanking the committee for all their hard work this session. I know the pandemic continues to present challenges, but this committee's members and their staff's willingness to continually work with MSCF is greatly appreciated. Given the limited resources at this committee's disposal, we know that very difficult decisions had to be made to put together this bill. It is clear to us, however, that throughout this process, students remained at the center of those decisions, and for that, you should be applauded. The tuition relief provided in this bill will have a profound effect on the educational path of many of our college students, allowing them to focus on their education, graduate in a timely manner, and leave our institution not only with a world-class education, but also possibly little to no debt. This is the potential to be transformative for many of our students and their families. As open access institutions, we have always been charged with meeting students where they're at and assisting them in their educational journey. But I must point out that many of the students who stand to benefit from this bill are also the exact students who need the most amount of support when they arrive at our door. I have testified to this committee twice this session, both times touching on the vital role faculty counselors play in our campuses across the state. I worked with Representative Cleavorn on House File 4220, a bill that would address the current counselor shortage, and later with Representative O'Neill on language changes that made the bill even stronger. We encourage this committee to continue its focus on student needs and revisit this counselor language when it feels it has the latitude to do so. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you today, and MSCF looks forward to continuing to work with you to make higher education the driver of both personal, professional, and economic growth in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we have with us Axel Kylander, Lead Minnesota President. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Axel Kylander, and I'm the president of LEAD-MN. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you to Chair Bernardi and committee members for your work this session to support students. The past two and a half years have been difficult for everyone, to put it mildly. And as a student leader, I have watched students across our campuses suffer and drop out due to the high cost of college and not being able to get the support they need with regards to their mental health, stable housing, or childcare, all while trying to get an education that will help them find economic stability. I've seen dreams ruined and lives set adrift, not by a lack of effort on the part of students, but as a result of overwhelming, worsening challenges that have festered in the college experience. Other students and I have shared our stories with you over the course of this session and the last, about the struggles that we face in today's higher education environment. As Minnesota moves out of the pandemic, we must make affordable college and college affordable and accessible for all Minnesotans. The free college grants contained in House File 3872 would do just that. These grants are an investment in the future workforce and economic success of our state and its people. That is why nearly 20 states controlled by both Republican and Democratic legislatures have adopted some form of last dollar free college program similar to this. This program has the potential to boost enrollment, retention, and graduation rates by removing one of the single greatest barriers to students, the untenably high cost of college. The power of this program also lies in its ability to change the narrative about college for low and middle income families. No longer would the conversation at the dinner table be about how a college family cannot afford college for their child. Instead, it will be about the opportunity available and which college and career path to choose. House File 3872 also provides programs that would help address many of the other major issues that have been holding students back from success in recent years. The ongoing funding for basic needs and mental health at Minnesota State, the Student Parent Support Initiative, hunger-free campus funding, and increased funding for emergency grants. All of these will have a tremendous impact on the success of our students in ensuring they have the support they need to complete their degrees. By ensuring these provisions, you can help put the community back in community and technical colleges, ensure that every Minnesotan can pursue and achieve their version of the American dream. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. And thank you, Chair Bernardi and committee members, for all your work for students this session.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kylander. And now with us, we have Mary Hoff with Minnesota Inclusive Higher Education Consortium. Welcome to the committee. And please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Mary Hoff, and I'm a parent advocate and co-leader of the Minnesota Inclusive Higher Education Consortium. Thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding the Higher Education Omnibus Bill today. On behalf of the consortium, the ARC Minnesota, the thousands of prospective students with intellectual disabilities and their families statewide, I thank you for including the provisions on inclusive higher education in Article 2, Section 4. The provision starting on line 14.3 broadens access to post-secondary education for students with intellectual disabilities throughout the state. As you have heard in this committee, students with intellectual disabilities who attend post-secondary education are more than twice as likely to be employed, live in homes of their own, and rely less on government supports like Social Security and vocational rehabilitation. Widening the pathway to post-secondary education will ensure Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities have the opportunity to pursue their careers, live the life of their choice, and more fully contribute to their communities. This will strengthen Minnesota's workforce, contribute to the Minnesota economy, and lead to long-term cost savings for the state. Minnesota's current inclusive higher education enrollment capacity of 90 to 100 students, compared to the estimated 5,000 prospective college students with intellectual disabilities, exposes the gap. The bill addresses the opportunity for Minnesota to join the states that are leading on inclusive higher education nationwide. Thank you for recognizing the importance of this bill. I would also like to thank Representative Cleavorn and the other committee members who are co-authors. We are grateful that you have made inclusive higher education a priority in your work this session, and we look forward to continuing to work together. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Well, I want to thank all of our testifiers today, and again, everyone who has testified this session before our committee and all of our staff members. We will be meeting on Wednesday, April 6th, and I look forward to the markup of the bill then and our conversation. So with that, members, the meeting is adjourned.